Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to the MMA Fan Podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you Stu and Blake.
Sorry again, guys. We're going to briefly interrupt the podcast to tell you about a new movie called Embattled. Embattled is starring Stephen Dorff. It's written by David McKenna, who wrote American History X and Blow. You will also see cameos from Tyrone Woodley and Kenny Florian in this film. And it's the story of a tumultuous relationship between a father and his son. And did I mention that both father and son are MMA fighters? So this could be right up your street. It's available from the 5th of July on digital download. Check it out.
Hello and welcome to the MMA Fan Podcast. I am Blake Harrison and I said hello first, just before you were about to say hello. Isn't that right, Stu? I could see you breathed in and you went, no, I can't speak now. Introduce yourself, Stu.
I took a big old breath and you went in and no jazz hands today with
no
your intro.
No, I've been mocked too much about my jazz hands. I've been mocked too much about my jazz hands. People are going to think we're drunk. I don't know what's going on with this. But yes, hello. Welcome to the MMA Fan Podcast. We have a fantastic episode for you today. But before we get onto the episode, we want to tell you about our amazing, lovely, supportive friends over at Free Train. They do these amazing vests for you to train in, for you to run in, and they store your phone close to your chest where you have easy access to it, and you can run listening to music or your favorite MMA-based podcast, which better be our one. They're fantastic. And if you go over to the Free Train website, www.freetrain.com, you can get a cool 10% off.
Yes, you can. By using the discount code MMAFAN.
Yes, MMAFAN. You sounded like you weren't sure about that, but he is correct.
Do you know what I was thinking? Is it the MMAFAN? It's MMAFAN. That's the discount code, and that will save you some pennies. And if you want to see how good a Free Train vest looks, you can go on their website and see all manner of kind of chiseled athletes looking incredible. Better still, head over to former guest Brett John's Instagram and you can see Brett in his car wearing a vest singing along to Cher.
Oh, it's beautiful. What a talented man. I believe in life after love.
Oh, wonderful. Freetrain.com. Go get stuck in. Should we get stuck into today's episode?
We absolutely should. We've got a fantastic guest as part of our Cage Warriors trilogy specials. It's Matt the Beast Bonner, and he is taking on Natias Frederick at Cage Warriors 123 for the middleweight belt on June 24th. It's a brilliant episode. Shall we just get on with it, Stu? Matt, how's it going?
Really good, fellas. How are you?
Really good, mate. Good. Well, where are you at the moment?
I'm at home in Warrington.
Oh, lovely, lovely. Has it been like a gym day today, or has it been chilled out one for you?
I've got a little bit of work on today, so I own my own gym, my own MMA gym with my brother Daniel, my twin brother. So I've got a little bit of work that I've done earlier on, and now it's just chill out day now.
Nice. When you say you've got work to do with that, is that like boring kind of bookkeeping stuff, or is it like something a bit more fun?
It's like one-to-one sessions. So oh, it's nice. Like a one-to-one basis with clients. They'll come in, do a little bit of pads or whatever they want to do. And then that's kind of like an hour session. And then, yeah, just train them. And I'm kind of lucky enough where I can do a job that I enjoy doing. So,
yeah, that sounds good. Sounds great.
And I mean, just to sort of roll it back a little bit to kind of get some more sort of context and backstory on you, and I'm sure your brother's going to feature in this question as well. What was your kind of introduction to combat sports, and how did that come about?
I started Thai boxing when I was 10 years old. I just finished football training as a youngster. And I'd, kind of Warrington, it's the same as any other northern town. It's got rough areas and nice areas. And we kind of happened to live in one of the rougher areas, me and my brother. So my mum said, you know, let's get you into a kind of a combat sport. And it just happened that this Thai boxing ad was in one of the newspapers. And that's how we went down to one of the gyms and really enjoyed it. And then the MMA came on about kind of 6-7 years after that. By watching The Ultimate Fighter. That's the kind of the first introduction to MMA for me and Dan. He's gone back to Thai boxing. He's a very good Thai boxer. He's like ninth in the world at Thai boxing.
Wow.
Where I've stuck at MMA. And yeah, like you say, we're both lucky enough where we can do this for a full-time job, but that's kind of where it originated in the start.
And going back then to, you know, just the concept of going in and learning, you know, Muay Thai and being put in a ring to spar and things like that. Was you comfortable at a young age with confrontation and being sort of faced with aggression and that kind of environment?
Not really. No, I'd say kind of me and Dan were the absolute opposite when we were kids. We hated confrontation. We didn't really even... We wanted to fight, but we put so much pressure on ourselves that we never even enjoyed the fighting in the end. Even from an early age, we both said that's possibly one of our biggest regrets from our amateur days was that you never enjoyed the whole process because we wanted to win so much that we ended up losing, if that makes sense. We didn't handle the pressure very well. And that's kind of recently, that's what I think I've done better is I've started to enjoy the whole process. But in terms of fighting or even sparring, we generally didn't enjoy those parts of the sport. It was more the keeping fit and possibly been able to defend ourselves if the need arised.
So with that, is it more a case of, if it's the right outcome, obviously, enjoying the outcome rather than the process? Because I can, obviously, I do an incredibly different job to you. You know, no one's hitting me in the face, but unless I've been a real arsehole. But I've sometimes had it even in my career, and I'm sure other people that do all sorts of jobs can have that understanding of like wanting to do such a good job that the job you're supposed to love to do, you're not actually enjoying the day-to-day aspect of it. But the finished product, when you win or when I watch a show back that I think is good or that I've done all right in and stuff like that, that I get an enjoyment and a sense of achievement from that. But sometimes sure. I'm so desperate to do well in it that the day-to-day process, I'm annoyed with myself. I didn't do a good job there. That wasn't right. So was that similar to you? You weren't enjoying the day-to-day, but maybe the end product you go, well, I won and that feels good.
That's initially 100% kind of what happened, and that's what's kind of flipped, or what I think's flipped. I do try and these days, especially enjoy even the bits like the weight cutting, you know, the cutting weight, or the very hard training sessions, or staying in the hotel waiting for the fights and all the rest of it, the weigh-ins and the little kind of nitty gritty horrible bits that maybe people don't get to see. I do try and take all this in. I think especially. Considering in this job, by the time you're 40 years old, that's it. Pretty much, you're finished. Your career's very short. And what I didn't want to do is look back on the career and say, Christ, you know what? I really miss it now, and I wish I'd enjoyed it a lot more as I was doing it. That would be kind of my advice to anyone coming up or any amateurs would just be enjoy it. Even your losses, you can learn so much from your losses. My record is quite poor. When you consider it to other people's, because I have made a lot of mistakes. I've made a lot, you know, I have been quite naive in some areas, but with every kind of mistake that I made, there always came like a learning process at the end of it, and always came some kind of adjustment.
You mentioned weight cutting, and looking back, am I right in saying that when you started, you was welter?
That's correct, yeah.
And so that move up is quite significant. So what's the weight cut like now? Like, is there much to take off ahead of a scrap, or how are you finding that? Are you on top of it now? Is it a process that is pretty straightforward and a lot easier?
The weight cut is so much easier now compared to what it used to be. I used to cut about 15 kilo in terms of weight, and that would be probably over like a 6-week period, which was an awful lot. What you'd find is that the whole training camp ended up being dedicated to this weight loss, which is, you know, obviously the wrong way to go about. Your training camp wants to be getting sharp for the fight, adjusting to whatever opponent that you're fighting. And it just ended up being kind of a slog to get this weight off, where like currently now I've got 6 kilos to lose, and that's very comfortable. That's me, even now, generally eating, you know, not eating terribly, but eating, having the odd treat on the weekend and whatnot on the odd treat day. When I get to the hotel, because obviously with Cage Warriors, we have to be in like a COVID bubble. So we have to stay in the hotel for kind of 2 or 3 days before we even get to fight. But by the time I get to the hotel, that the weight is already off. There's no kind of no saunas, no salt baths, no kind of sweats in the sweatsuits or anything. It's you know, all the hard work in regards to the weight is done and it's off. And it makes it so much more easy to enjoy than it would prior, when you wake up and you've got 6 kilo to lose in one day or in one morning sometimes.
I don't know if you just saw me then looking at my phone. And the reason I was doing that, I wasn't being rude. I was, because I had known nothing about kilos. And I wanted to just make everyone that's listening to this understand what you were saying. Because I think most British people go, we're stones, isn't it? It's like, and so when you say 15 kilo, you're cutting 15 kilo, that's 2 stone, 5 pounds.
Sure, yeah.
That, like, in what period of time are you cutting 2 stone, 5 pounds?
That is kind of like a 6-week period. And most of that, for anyone who kind of doesn't know the weight cutting period, I'll keep this nice and quick, but most of it is water weight. So what we're trying to do is essentially you're trying to dehydrate your body. Instead of, like, a conventional person who wants to lose weight because they want to feel a bit better or healthier or look better, whatever, they want to lose fat. So they'll be kind of some kind of calorie restriction, and they'll diet down and they'll look better and all the rest of it. In terms of fighting, we want to be able to put the weight back on the next day. That's the point of the weight cut, is that you go in bigger and stronger than your opponent. And obviously you can't put 15 kilo of muscle back on the day after losing it. So we essentially pull all the water out of our bodies. Again, we can do that with a few different ways. We can do that by salt baths, which is sitting in like an incredibly hot bath full of Epsom salt, and that will draw the water out of your skin, or the moisture out of your skin. Saunas, which is kind of self-explanatory. You sweat in a sauna. And then obviously wearing lots of layers, going for runs, sweating out that way. So all the weight is what we call like a water weight. First you'd water load, and then you'd cut the water. And it's, you know, as you can imagine, it's not really comfortable. It is by far the hardest part of a fight camp. The fight compared to the weight cut is almost the easy part.
And when you say water loading, again, people don't understand, but is that just drinking lots and lots and lots of water in the lead up to then dehydrating the body? So
exactly.
Yeah.
So what you kind of do is, or what the science behind it, if you know, I'm surely no scientist, but what you'll do is you'll drink kind
compared
of.
Compared to us, you are, mate. You are a fucking neurosurgeon compared to us. Don't worry about that.
So you'll drink, I start by drinking 8 litres of water, and then you'll taper this down for the next kind of 5 days. But when you initially drink that 8 litres of water, your body will release some kind of hormone, which will try and excrete the water, because obviously 8 litres of water, the body doesn't really know what to do with. So your body goes into this kind of water flushing mode, and it will be in that for like the next 5 days. And so you're slowly, over the course of the 5 days, losing the weight. And then obviously you pair that with the other kind of techniques we were talking about before, with the salt baths and whatnot. And hopefully you'd like to think you lose that. I'd imagine the week of the fight, that was possibly maybe 7 to 8 kilos would be the week of the fight, and the rest would be leading up to it.
Wow. So that's just like in a week, that's roughly like a stone, maybe a bit more.
Sure.
It's just just crazy. And the other thing that really always seems unfair to me when I look at the weight classes, and I'm sure you smiling, I think you know maybe what I'm going to start saying, but like 125 to 155, it's all 10 pounds difference. You know, sure. Connor can go up and down. Henry Cejudo can go up and down. It's a 10-pound difference. And then when you get to lightweight, if you want to go up, you've got to add 15 pounds. That's over a stone. Sure. And then another 15 pounds for middleweight. So your jump from welter to middle, that's huge. That's over a stone. And then, Jesus, you look at Adesanya recently and how undersized he was when he fought Jan Blachowicz. Because that's 20 pounds. That's like that's not far off two stone that he's trying to add on. Are you there, one of these people, like I would be, I think, thinking, guys, this isn't right. If I was like a bit smaller, I'd just be able to go up and down 10 pounds, whatever. Why is it that the higher weight classes have such bigger gaps? Would it not interest you as a fighter, and I'm sure a lot of fighters out there, to go, come on, let's go 155, 65, 75, 85, 95, 205. Is that interesting?
It doesn't, and they've talked about this quite an awful lot. In fact, you'll see quite a lot of domestic shows introducing the kind of the middle weight classes. So if we're talking like between a lightweight and a welterweight weight class, there might be something like a 74 kilo, or in pounds, that might be like 162 pounds or something like that. So there's definitely a call for it. In terms of the UFC, I think, unfortunately, you're going to have to wait for that catastrophic weight cut where somebody gets badly injured or, you know, possibly dies. In terms of ONE FC, that's what happened there. You had like a young 19 to 21-year-old kid who ended up dying of a stroke in the saunas. And then
they
introduced these kind of hydration tests afterwards, which seems to have kind of been very successful. So I think that's the only way kind of these weight classes or these hydration tests are going to end up being implemented, is by something, unfortunately, you know, horrible happening like that.
Yeah, and it shouldn't have to get to that stage either, should it? It is, as you said, it's the worst part of the sport, because you want everyone to also go into these fights healthy. And I'm sure you will attest to this, having competed at welterweight. I'm sure the Matt Bonner that fought at 170 pounds versus the Matt Bonner at 185 pounds, there's probably a world of difference there in terms of stamina, durability, all that stuff.
100%. And I think you are, and we do talk about the weight cuts and stuff and all the rest of it, but I think compared to when I first started, and we are talking kind of maybe close to 10 years now in terms of MMA, the weight cuts have got a lot better. I think you see someone like Robert Whittaker, who had kind of like a tough time in welterweight, then moved up to middleweight and became the champion. These guys kind of paved the way for, or showed everyone that it's not the be-all and end-all of everything. You know, when I first started the sport, this kind of 10, 15 kilo weight cut or 2.5 stone weight cut, everybody was doing it because it was seen to be a massive advantage at the time. But people have learned over time that if you go in big, but you're still dehydrated, because you're not going to get all the fluids back in. Your stamina's affected. I think we're kind of seeing the back end of these ridiculous weight cuts for the most part, anyway.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So you've had a good weight cut and you're in that room before you walk out to the cage. What's your routine 10, 15 minutes before you walk out?
In terms of walking into the fight or walking out of the hotel room?
Walking out to the fight.
I do quite a lot of pacing up and down. There's a lot of kind of positive reinforcement in terms of I'm talking to myself and I'm telling myself I'm going to win and stuff like that. Or I'm kind of telling myself just go out there and do your best. It's almost like what your mum would say to you before you did a sports day or something like that. You'll go out and do your best. It's one of those. But yeah, a lot of pacing, it's a bit of a funny one in cage wise because you've got kind of like a pre-walkout area. So you've got the warm-up area, then you walk out to this kind of pre-warm-up area. And you've literally got like a sheet of fabric between you and your opponent, so you can kind of hear them grunting and talking to themselves and doing the same thing you're doing next to you. So that's generally what I'll be doing, and that's something that I'm much better at doing now than I used to be. Be more positive, going out there and enjoying it, and like I say, do your best. And people kind of look at me and say, "Oh, don't be like that, don't say that." But you can only ever do your best, and that's kind of what I've kind of my mantra is, I suppose. Now, go out there, do your best. And for the most part, my best has been good enough for the last three fights, anyhow.
And you talked about...
When you do walk out, how different has it been walking out to empty venues to obviously packed venues? Has that affected you?
It's not really, because I was never one of these guys who could pack out a room in terms of... I'm not like the Paddy Pimlet who's got 10,000 friends, you know. He thrives off the audience. No, I've got like my girlfriend and my mum. That's about it. So it's not maybe kind of factored into my fights as much as it might for theirs. But it's a shame that, this kind of Cage Warriors trilogy is another one that's going to be behind closed doors. But it's a shame. It would have been nice to see your family if you did win this world title. It'd be a great memory. But hopefully if I win, they can come and see me defend it. So it's not really played a massive factor into my fights. And even if there was a filled-out crowd, I think that would be the same. It don't really... The way I have always looked at it is once you're in the cage, it's you and the fella and the referee, and everybody else can kind of just watch and enjoy. They've not really got any participation in the fight. It's me who's in control and the other fella.
And you mentioned in your answer to our last question about that small sheet, like kind of separating you from your opponent when you're walking out, when you're warming up. Sorry, we had Angela Hill on the show recently, who started on a Muay Thai background, and she was saying that like where she was, they had like a similar thing, just like a curtain separating. And so trainer was like, "Let them hear you," and she's like, "Ah, ah, ah," and it's like an intimidation thing. Do you get involved in any of that? In any other kind of like mind games of intimidation, like during that kind of time, or even maybe leading up to it? Because the face-offs are such a big moment for some fighters. I think there's some fighters out there that just go to the face-off. They just look at the opponent and go, "Look, we're gonna fight." I mean, Ben Askren was always pretty good at just going, "Sure, mate, I don't need anyone to act up. We're about to go and fight. Like, what more do you want?" And but there's other people that are really in your face. And was it who's the Ion Kutalaba was recently like, and he's like shouting in people's faces or grabbing a hold of people. And I think sometimes taking it a bit a step too far and stuff. And we saw Jeremy Stevens pushing Draco closer a while back as well. That's too much of fight fell out because of injury. But some people do really see like, "Oh, I saw fear in his eyes," or anything like that. So in terms of just before the fight with that curtain, the Muay Thai style, as Angela Hill was talking about it, but also the face-offs, are you interested in any of that kind of mind games and intimidation, or is that just like, it's a waste of time, we're going to fight?
Probably the second one. You know, yeah. I always kind of figured the guys who were pushing and shoving and shouting were always the ones who were the most scared, the ones who were kind of the most nervous about the whole thing. Generally, kind of like a standoff, you'd look at them in the eyes and you'd kind of just see what the body language was. But I was never one for kind of talking or pushing and shoving or anything like that. Or in terms of like the backstage with the curtain thing, it's more me getting in my frame of mind and not really worrying about the other person. I can only control myself, and I don't really want to kind of come out of character. At any time, certainly in my early career, where I maybe did try and get aggressive or get angry or anything like that, it always worked to my detriment. I think you're probably better off, for me personally anyway, saving the energy, focusing on what I want to do, and less about the other person on the other side of the curtain.
Has that ever been a consideration, though? I mean, not necessarily the huge trash talking and things like that, but you mentioned Paddy earlier, and Paddy's obviously someone that's never short of something to say, super charismatic, and has obviously, as you know, alluded to, has now got a huge following because of the way that he has built Paddy the brand, and we've obviously seen this with Connor and we chatted to Ian Garry a couple of days ago, and he seems very much on that path as well to create this big persona. Has that ever been something? Because what you do generally see from these fighters that create this huge media interest is that will at some point create further income,
sure,
and bigger money. And is that something that you ever sort of considered, like, right, what can I do here, and do I want to play that game because it could have financial, you know, implications?
I think it's always kind of been tempting to go in that direction, but I think that's either in you or it isn't. It's not something that you can switch on. It's like,
yeah,
Paddy can be a room full of people and he's got the room rolling around on the floor in like 5 minutes. like you said, he's just got massive charisma, right? I don't think I've got that massive kind of bubbly personality. I'm kind of a little bit more laid back and stoic almost. And I would kind of hope to go the other way and kind of be more like a Donald Cerrone, of a guy who just goes in there and does the talking with his fists or whatever and gets respect that way. But in terms of kind of the short-term finances and getting attention, I think that what you've said in terms of being able to put that charisma across and taunt and stuff, it is definitely, if you've got it, definitely use it. But it's just something that I don't think that's really part of my personality. And I think if I tried, I think everybody just think I was a proper dickhead, I'm going to keep being a little bit more laid back about it. But yeah, definitely, if you've got that kind of charisma personality, then put that to use.
So am I right in saying you train at Next Generation as well with Paddy and Molly and so many other amazing fighters? What's a day in the gym like there with all of these personalities floating about?
It's fun. It is fun. And like I said, I say this as someone who's more in the background, who's more listening to it than participating in it. But they're definitely the one. As soon as I have a Paddy or Molly's coming on, you know, the music's loud and the bouncing around. And I think the Scousers in general have this kind of other, they have this other sort of energy. I'm not really sure where they get it from, where they always want to spar, they always want to fight. I used to have a boxing coach who's a Scouser, and they always said, if you walked into a pub or a room and said, who wants to fight, every single person in that room who was a Scouser will put their hand up. They'd just like a tear up. They'd just love to fight.
It's like, weird because it's such a lovely place as well. Like, I've only been to Liverpool about 3 or 4 times. I'm like, every time I'm here, I'm like, everyone's so nice. Like, I'm a Londoner. I'm like, people aren't nice. People, if you go up to someone and be like, oh, mate, what's the time? They'd be like, are you trying to nick my watch? Can you get away from me, please? Like, what are you doing? But in Liverpool, everyone's like, oh, just like really, really lovely. It's so strange.
I came to Next Gen quite late in my career. I went to Next Gen 2 years ago. And I came with, like as I mentioned before, quite a poor record and not much of a... No, I don't think anyone thought I'd be competing for world titles or anything like that, but I'd actually fought someone from Next Gen as well. So anyway, I said, you know, kind of coming to Next Gen, and it was arranged that I'd go in and have kind of like a trial period. And I was a little bit nervous going in because it is this world-class facility and you've got big characters there. And I think it was Paddy who came up to me first and welcomed me to the gym and, you know, was super nice about it. And so you're right in terms of what you're saying. The Scousers, they like a fight and they can be super aggressive and stuff. But there's also that kind of, they're very much, when you're part of the group, it's very much like a family atmosphere. Everybody wants you to do well. Everybody's on your side and you can punch each other in the face and then have a good laugh afterwards.
You've mentioned Molly, we've mentioned Paddy. They've both been Cage Warriors champions. They've both gone on to now the UFC. Can you take any extra confidence knowing that, you know, that the path you're about to tread and want to tread, people in your gym who you see daily have already trodden that path? And have they by any chance maybe given you any advice or words of wisdom? Because, you know, they've done it and fairly recently.
I think you can definitely take encouragement from the fact that it's been there and been done. And these aren't coaches who say if I get signed to the UFC or whatever, these aren't coaches who are going to kind of be thrown by that. Oh my God, Matt's in the UFC. What are we going to do? Are we going to train or anything like that? Everything is in place. They've been there. They've done it. They've been to Las Vegas. They've been to massive shows abroad. So that helps an awful lot. And obviously that's a massive part of being, you know, part of Cage Warriors as well. Is there's so many Cage Warriors guys who have won the world title who have gone on to fight for the UFC in terms of Conor McGregor, Dan Hardy, and Molly and Paddy, we've mentioned. There's 100 plus more who have also walked that path. So that's definitely been the appeal of Cage Warriors for me, is that there is a clear pathway to get to the UFC. And I said this to someone else I was having a conversation with the other day, is everybody at Next Gen in the room wants to go to the UFC. There's nobody in there who's thinking, oh, you know what, I think I'll have a fight and then maybe I'll go back to the warehouse or go back to the building site. Everybody in there wants to be a UFC fighter. And that we kind of, in that way, everyone's pushing each other. But certainly in terms of Next Gen, there's like a little trophy cabinet in Next Gen and they've got like 3 Cage Warriors World titles in there already. So that's always nice to see. And I think Molly said the other day, nobody out of Next Gen who's fought for a Cage World title, Cage Warriors World title, has ever lost. So that's nice. That's nice to know. And yeah, hopefully I'll be number 4. But like I say, you've got the staff and you've got the fighters around you who definitely have the knowledge and the know-how to get you to the bigger shows.
And when we talk sort of bigger shows and other organisations, UFC constantly keeps presenting itself as the, you know, we all know it's the biggest organisation, but something that I'm always interested in now is Bellator and the fact that we're seeing so many fighters and it evolving from being where, you know, former UFC legends kind of retire from the UFC into Bellator and you see some, you know, some great, we're now seeing, you know, legit prospects in Bellator. And what we're also hearing, if you know what we hear is true, is the money's considerably better in Bellator. And so with that in mind, once you win this belt and you get an opportunity to then move to another organization, is it the chosen path of I want to go to the biggest organization and, you know, make my name there and cement my legacy? Or is it, a legit consideration that, okay, well, I could go here and I could potentially make more money? Like, what's the plan?
I think when I first started MMA, again, this is when I was 17, there wasn't any money in MMA. It's changed so much. I always say with people, like, there wasn't, in terms of, like staff, like, I've got an S&C coach and you've got guys you look after your diet and your nutrition and stuff, and these things didn't exist when we first started. What I'm trying to get at really is that I've not really got any, there's nothing in me that says, oh my God, I'm going to go for the money. Because when I started, there was no money in it. I would like to go to the UFC. That is the ultimate goal. But then if another organization comes and says, listen, we're going to give you 10,000 to fight and 10,000 quid to win, that goes a long way to paying your bills as well. So it is a legitimate kind of, if the option was there, it'd certainly be tempting. But I think the UFC is always going to be, for me anyway, the kind of the personal goal. Everyone wants to go to the UFC. Everyone's nans, granddads, aunties, uncles knows what the UFC is. So yeah, I mean, like I said, if that option came along, I'd have a good deep think about it. But UFC is more appealing at this point in my life.
And you mentioned that.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. and it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
You know, that's one of the big pluses with Cage Warriors is they do seem to be a great feeder organization for European fighters into the UFC. And I suppose one of the things that you have to consider when you're in a position like you are, and especially when you become a Cage Warriors champion, the UFC are taking note. Like, they're looking already. And the contract, I guess, either comes in two ways. It comes in a, oh, Matt, you're brilliant here. Have this lovely contract. And, you know, we'll sort you out a fight down the line and it's really great. Or it's, hey, Matt, someone just dropped out of a fight. We'll give you a UFC contract for, let's say, like two fights or whatever, but you're fighting in 8 days.
That's right.
If that 8-day opportunity comes in, are you up for that? Because we've spoken to fighters that say, I don't want my debut to be that. I want to earn the respect of the UFC so that they come to me because they want me as part of their roster, not because, oh shit, who can we get? And you hope that it kind of works out for you. Because obviously you take that late notice fight and you might be fighting someone that's been prepping for 10 weeks and you've got 8 days. It's you know, the you'll be a massive underdog in that fight. So are you up for that? Because it's just like, I'll just take any opportunity, or do you want to go, no, I'm waiting for the thing that's right for me?
I think I've kind of, I've almost made a career out of fighting anyone. I think most people look at my record, and again, I've got kind of like a 9-win, 6-loss record. But I've only kind of got to this world title fight because I would fight anyone. I fought George Smith, two, three fights ago. And George Smith was like the massive, I was certainly the underdog in that fight, let's put it that way. But then you beat George Smith and then they give you somebody else who's a little bit better. And again, you're the underdog. Then you beat him and then you get James Webb, who's the former champion. And then once you beat him, they just can't deny you the belt, yeah, because you initially took on that big underdog fight. So I would definitely take the opportunity. This isn't, in terms of the sport of MMA, it's not this big fairy tale where the UFC are going to come knocking on your door and say, oh, please, please come to the UFC, Matt, because we saw you fight as Frederick and you look so amazing. It is going to be sometimes. We need a fighter. Do you want to do it? Because if you don't, there's 10 other guys who have said they're already going to do it. So, and I kind of think this is part of what, again, what's been successful for me is I've stayed very consistent during training camps. I've not done my training camp, done my fighting and disappeared, not to go on a session or anything. I've got straight back into training pretty much the next week. So if that opportunity did come along, I still think I'd be in good shape and I'd still be, you know, training and whatnot. I'd still be super sharp. So yeah, if the opportunity came, I'd definitely take it. And listen, if you lose, you lose. It's one of those who expect you to win anyway. I've always kind of thrived off being that big underdog. And again, that's kind of been a way that the pressure has been taken off me in previous fights. So yeah, I would definitely take the opportunity to fight on a few days' notice.
Well, we've mentioned the Fredericks fight a few times in the duration of this chat. How's training going, and what can we expect from Matt Bonner in that fight?
training's gone really well. Training's gone so smooth. I think it was 2 weeks on Thursday, the fight. But if you'd asked me a week ago, I'd have said, I think there's 8 weeks left, because training camp's gone so smooth that you've not kept up with the weeks. If you're looking at your calendar and going, oh, bloody hell, I've got 6 weeks of this left, that's when you know your training camp's not going very well. So it's gone super fast. My weight's even better than the last fight. And as we've mentioned previously, you know, the weight cut for me isn't a big deal, but I'm in a good place there. In terms of what to expect, that's a little bit of a tricky one to answer, because without kind of being condescending to Frederick, I do think I'm probably a little bit better everywhere. And I say it's tricky because if you go against someone who's like a really, really good grappler, the game plan is you're not going to let him grapple and you're going to beat him up on the feet. If you go against a really good striker, then it'd be vice versa. You take the guy down. So the game plan for this one is a little bit more diverse. Generally, I'm going to go in there. I think I'm just going to see how the fight presents itself, see what he brings, and then take it from there. I think I've trained so well in all the different kind of skill sets in terms of the wrestling and the striking and the grappling that I am very confident wherever the fight goes. So I'm not going in there with this kind of A to B game plan. It's let's see what he brings. Be careful. Keep my hands nice and tall because he's a very dangerous striker. And just see what presents itself at the time.
And after the fight, everything goes well. You get the belt. What's the celebration looking like? What's the go-to food or the drink or the party? Or what's the thing you're going for that you're most looking forward to afterwards?
I'm going to be super boring. I think most people, I'm going to go on a session, I'm going to smash it for a week. And I'm thinking, I'm going to go home and have a cheesecake. That's kind of like my thing. I'm going to go home and have some ice cream. And that'll probably last like a week. You know, eating crap all week and eating too much fast food, and that's probably it. But not something like super exciting. And there's no kind of rock star lifestyle that I'm secretly living. It's go home and eat too much kind of cheesecake, ice cream, whatever, and then probably get back into training kind of a week, 2 weeks after.
I think you'll be surprised at how many fighters are just like I'm going home. And I think it was Jack Shaw and Ian Garry, actually, they're both, well, actually, a lot of the fighters we speak to, they're like, pizza. They're like, I just want a big pizza. Jack Shaw was also very into Skittles. Ian Garry was saying he really wanted Skittles. So that's how rock and roll you all are deep down, is you just want pizza and sweets, and cheesecake. So, yeah, that's great. No, I think that's great. And, I think one other thing I wanted to ask you was, what do you do outside of the gym to relax? Like when you're not being Matt Bonner the fighter, when you're not being, you know, having your own MMA gym and training other people and stuff, what's your kind of go-to thing for just relaxing and chilling out?
I think, again, it's probably quite similar to everybody else. It's, you know, I've got a PS5 that I'll enjoy playing on and stuff.
Oh, so you're one of the rare people that actually have a PS5.
I don't know how I got one. My missus bought it for me for Christmas, funny enough. It was like a joint Christmas birthday present because my birthday's on Boxing Day. So she managed to, I don't know if she managed to get it.
She must have been in a queue for a week.
I think it was like an Amazon order, but we had a little bit of trouble when it first came because I think the delivery driver nicked it, as loads of them did. And they sent us around the estate knocking on people's, you know, poor old women's doors saying, have you got my PS5?
Fucking hell, you don't want Matt Bonner knocking on your door, do you? Got my PS5.
Nan, the beast's here. Just to say you haven't seen it. Just say it's under, good job, you hide under the bed. The beast's here.
Yeah, so that was kind of like three or four doors of the neighbourhood, which I've kind of ruined those relationships with. It's like PS5, or I'll kind of go to the cinemas now that we can. My missus like kind of likes going to cinemas as well, so I'll go along with that. And my brother's just had his first baby as well, so it's quite nice to go.
Congratulations!
Yeah, so it's just the family stuff and just kind of training in terms of getting away from training. We're stuck in the gym so much now, and obviously I enjoy it, and it's also my job and my work and stuff. So it is nice to get away and de-stress and just kind of deload, I suppose.
Matt, thanks so much for your time today, mate. It's been lovely having a chat with you. And obviously, we wish you all the best. Go get that belt, and we can't wait to see you make a big noise over in the UFC.
Thank you, fellas.
It's been an absolute delight chatting to you, Matt. Thanks so much, mate.
Have a good Sunday, guys. Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, mate.
Cheers, mate. All the best.
Wow. I mean, that was... I think that was... it was a great episode, and... For me, one of the more insightful ones. Just that kind of snapshot into weight cut. It's fascinating. Absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, because we all know about weight cuts. We all know, you know, it's, you know, bad for your health. It's dehydration. It's you know, probably one of the worst aspects of the sport. But I think he broke it down more than any other fighter. Because I think sometimes the fighters forget, and maybe even we sometimes forget, that there could be people listening to this that, you know, they know of weight cuts, but they don't really understand what a weight cut is. And I think when he's talking about, you know, the Epsom salts in the bath and dragging all the water out and water loading beforehand, and it highlights even more the fact that you're water loading and then your body is producing a hormone that's helping you secrete the water and all that. It's mad. And the I loved the detail of that. And the fact that he was talking about cutting, you know, well over 2 stone in 6 weeks. And there'll be people out there that don't understand what's going on. And hopefully listening to something like this, they will. That they go, oh my God, I'd love to cut like a stone or 2 stone, you know, for that amount of time. I've got the beaches are open. I want to go out in my swim shorts or whatever it is. But in my Speedos. The fact that it is so dangerous.
Yeah.
You can't be messing around with that stuff. And the fact that, you know, it wouldn't work. you can dehydrate yourself as much as you want. You're then going to rehydrate yourself. It won't work. It's a completely different type of weight loss.
As he said, it's almost, you know, there's a science to it. And I think, you know, what we've seen, you know, over the recent sort of decade or so is that science has evolved. And you know, it would appear that there's been lots of progression in it to ensure that these things are done more safely, because, you know, just hearing what he said, you can understand how easily that can go wrong and people can get seriously hurt, or, as he said, you know, can die. That's you know, is the body meant to do that?
No,
probably not.
Oh, absolutely probably not. And we saw, I forget the lady's name, so apologies for that, but we had one only at the last pay-per-view or the pay-per-view before. Was it Stolyarenko? It might not have been. So I don't know. I can't remember. It might have been Stolyarenko, but it might not. So don't hold me to that. But, you know, she was on the scales twice and basically was passing out, like falling over off the scales. Yeah. This stuff is no joke. And, you know, it's one thing for... I don't know if it was Ian Gary saying this recently, but like, it was one thing for the UFCPI to be open and for people to have all these nutritionists because they make loads of money and all that stuff for the Connors and the Rondas and the John Jones and all that. But when it's, you know, someone who's just got their own gym and they're just holding pads for people, and or, you know, they might be working in construction outside of doing their MMA career, how are they then doing this safely?
It's
hard. And yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if there's really bad situations going on, particularly at the lower levels of the sport, so those kind of grassroots levels where people are taking it too far and you may not hear about some of the real negative implications of it.
Absolutely. I just thought, aside from it being really insightful, what a really nice dude. Just completely grounded, down to earth. And I'd love to see him grab that belt. You know, I loved how honest he was about his record, you know, and his career. And he said, you know, with every loss come a lesson, you know, and he's learned from that, and he's on a 3-fight streak now. And to then get that belt and then to get the next opportunity, you know, presented after that, incredible. I wish him all the best.
Absolutely, yep. And for people that aren't aware, he's fighting Natias Frederick at Cage Warriors 123 for the middleweight belt on June 24th. So yeah, and that's Matt the Beast Bonner going for that middleweight strap, fingers crossed for him there. I just love the idea of him knocking on old ladies' houses and going, have you got my PS5?
Absolutely. That fight's part of the Cage Warriors trilogy. So many stacked cards on that. Go get stuck into that. You can watch it on Fight Pass or just go over to the Cage Warriors website and find out where else you can catch up with everything that's going to be happening around the trilogy. We back next time?
We're back next time with more Cage Warriors, I would imagine. But
I imagine you're right.
Bye.